Well, good afternoon, brethren. Once again, just want to say how much we appreciate being able to be here this weekend for the season of fellowship and for seeing many dear friends. You know, when I look out at the tremendous diversity in the body of Christ, and as I look out on each of you, I'm a little bit nostalgic because, you know, as I look out at individual faces, I see not friends for a year, friends for a decade, but friends for eternity. Before we get started, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you about the Florida Convention, a little animation there, coming up in just a few weeks, and I know some of you will be there. And so we want to let all of you know that we would just love to see you in Florida. And if you come, you can expect to see scenes much like this. Not really. We're not on the coast, but we would love to see each and every one of you. We do have a program. If it's not out, come and see me, and I'll give you one. Just coming up. What's this about a long run? I'll tell you about some events that happened about a year ago, and in some ways these thoughts are somewhat of a continuation of our talk and our thoughts this morning. About a year ago, my daughter, about a year and a half ago, my daughter decided to run in the Disney Marathon. And she decided to do that. She ran for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and they're a major contributor, the Disney Marathon. You go out and raise money through sponsorship, and it contributed about $9 million last year, the run for leukemia and lymphoma. And my daughter wrote a letter, and she was doing it on behalf of Ginger Brand, who at that time was going through a bout with leukemia. And so we went to the race to be supportive and to see what was happening. And, you know, I had seen races on TV before or in the movies, and we found out that it was quite a different experience than what we had imagined. There was a lot more things going on than you would imagine on the surface. And so I decided that the next year I would run the marathon. And so that's what I did on January 11th of this year. And you might say, well, what is a consecrated brother doing running a marathon? That seems like a whole lot of nothing. But then again, let us look at, there are lessons that we learn by observation, and there are some that we learn by doing, and quite often it's far too many lessons by doing. In this case, we would say that there are certain nuances that we can only experience by doing. And now having run the marathon, I can tell you that it was quite a different experience to actually participate than even being on the sidelines. So we thought today we would look at some of those lessons and also show you how this equates to our Christian course as well. Now, I understand recently there was a convention somewhere on the East Coast where they said, Paul must have been a runner because he used the analogy of running. And we know that this was on the mindset of those of this day because of some of what has been left behind. This is just a couple of pots that are left over from that time period. And we see this theme of the great run occurring. In Hebrews 12:1, we have, wherefore, seeing also we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And you'll remember, what is this right around? What's those heroes of faith chapter? And so we see that the Apostle Paul is equating their lives to being in the race course. In fact, you know, when we talk about the brethren, if they die, we typically say they finish their course. And this is, you know, part of that analogy as well. So we feel that the Apostle Paul in particular gives us this as an analogy. An analogy is a picture that we can look at and find out many similarities and perhaps glean some lessons from. But the Apostle Paul doesn't stop here. The scriptural description continues in 1 Corinthians 9, verses 23 and 24 and 26. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be a partaker of it with you. So he's saying to those that were present, this is what I do, that we all might be partakers of this prize. Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye might obtain. And then he continues on in the 26th verse and says, I therefore run. So he's giving us an analogy here that this is like a race course. And when we look at the writings of Paul predominantly in the New Testament, we find out that in 1 Corinthians, 1 Timothy, Hebrews, Galatians, and Ephesians, there are, in all of these books, there are analogies to our Christian course as a run. So according to Paul, consecration is in many ways like running a race. And the race that they're talking about, you know, if we look in sports today, there are many races. But the race that they were talking about was the great race, the marathon. But is this a concept that we only have in the New Testament? Or can we find it elsewhere? And what is the authorization? You know, this is what the Apostle Paul said. Is it substantiated elsewhere? In Habakkuk 2:2, we have a verse that we're all familiar with. Oops. Did I skip? Okay. And the Lord answered me and said, write down the vision and make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. I want you to note, the Lord answered on this. The Lord's instruction was he was going to put down a vision that could be laid on tables and made clear, that he that runneth, would run. And so we see even Jehovah God, and I'm sure that this is where the Apostle Paul came into his mind thought about this process as well, envisioned this great run. Well, what is the history of this long run? Well, first of all, there was a runner, probably the most famous runner of ancient times, called Pheidippides. And he was both a soldier and a professional runner. Because in that day, they had to communicate. They didn't use radios. They would send a runner out to communicate between the different generals of the different cities. And so this was his job. And so there was a great battle between the Persians and the Athenians. And that was, it was building up to where there was going to be a great battle where the Athenians were far outnumbered. I think the factor was 6-1. So there was a great concern, and so they sent Pheidippides to Sparta to seek reinforcements, basically, so that they could overcome this threat from the east. So Pheidippides ran 140 miles to Sparta, and he talked to them and solicited their help, and they said they would help, but they had to hold off a little bit. They were having a holy holiday, and they couldn't come right then. So what did Pheidippides do? He turned around and ran back 140 miles. And then he went into battle with the Athenians. And they had a very interesting and aggressive strategy. And it turned out that they basically decimated the Persians despite their overwhelming odds and sent them back to the sea. Well, when they sent them back to the sea, they sent them back to their ships. And this was on the plain called Marathon. So there you got the pieces of how this worked. But the marathon really came back out with the fact that Pheidippides was then charged with running back to Athens to declare the victory over the Persians and to warn the Athenians that the Persians might be coming by sea. And that was the 26 miles that we know as today's marathon. Now, Pheidippides faithfully made that run after having on prior days run 140 miles. In prior days to that, another 140 miles. And when he got to Athens, he gave the message that they had won. He warned them of the pending danger, and he died from total and complete exhaustion. So this is the picture that everyone in Paul's time had in their mind of a run. We wanted to lay that out. And one of the interesting things was then it became a tradition that came became called the Olympic Games, or the Games of that day. And this occurred between these different city-states. And it was interesting, even if they were at war with each other, they would stop the war, go from the battlefield, have the games, and then come back and resume afterwards. So that was the importance of it. So the question you might pose is, what is the importance of exercise? And we want to make sure we're very clear on this point. Am I promoting that all the brethren in Chicago should start training for the Chicago Marathon? Absolutely not. That's not the importance of the race. In 1 Timothy 4:8 we read, "For bodily discipline is only of a little profit, but godliness is profitable in all things, since it holds the promise of present life and also for the life to come." New American Standard Version. So he's saying that bodily exercise is a good thing. It's not bad, but if that's your focus, you're off track. It's not the important thing. But then in converse, what can we learn from those that do this? Well, the first thing that we learn is that in order to compete in this kind of a race, it requires self-discipline. You can't just go out on a Saturday afternoon and run a marathon. Can't do it. You've got to have self-discipline. It also, in the process of training, builds endurance and strength. And the only way you can do that is to practice, 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 and practice. In the course of that, it demands that we have patience. And we've got to be patient with ourselves and patience with others. So while we're building this strength and endurance, we have to be patient. And finally, and ultimately, it instills confidence in the one who's running. Now, what is the analogy to consecration? You know, you see in this picture, there's a couple of crowns. There's a gold crown, and there's a crown of leaves. And they call this a laurel that would be awarded to each and everyone who finished the race. Kind of interesting, isn't it? Every runner who finished got this crown of olive leaves as a laurel on their head. But you know, in this race, there was only one winner. And then everyone else was a finisher. Similarly, when we look at the Christian race, we realize there is a forerunner. And we know who that forerunner is. In Hebrews 12:2, we read, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith." We realize, you know, if you're looking for first place, you're not going to get it. It's already been taken. And it was necessary for that forerunner to complete the race course before others could even enter in. And unlike those that went for a corruptible crown, we run for an incorruptible. In 1 Corinthians 9:24 and 25, the Apostle Paul writes, "Know ye not that they which run a race, run all, but one receiveth the prize?" There's only one winner. So what are the rest of the people? Everything else? What are the rest of the people? Are they losers? No, they're finishers. So one receives the prize. "So run that ye might obtain." Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. You know, it was kind of interesting in the race. At about mile 23, they had people out there cheering you on. And they had the little medal that you would win if you finished the race. And it was so appropriate. It was golden-colored Mickey Mouse ears because it was the Disney Marathon. So it was a Mickey Mouse race, but you know, and it really contrasts with the race course that's laid out for us in heaven. It has nothing to do with Mickey Mouse stuff. It's an incorruptible crown that's being offered. You know, when you start a race, and before you start, you really, the first step is you got to have commitment. And you have to pre-qualify. Most of these races, you can't just walk up and say, "I'm going to run the race." Doesn't work that way. A lot of them you have to be invited to or win a lottery. So you have to qualify. You have to make a decision to run. You have to determine that you can pay the entrance fee. So the entrance fee is, you know, certain amount of money. You have to pay that up front. And as I found out when I broke my leg, the entrance fee is non-refundable. Non-refundable. I called up and said, you know, I broke my leg and I won't be able to run. And they said, that's fine. We can take you out of the race. But you don't get a refund. Or we can leave you in the race and you can come get your t-shirt and your, you know, your number. And so it wasn't any difference. Once you're in, you're in. You're committed. And we find this really, you know, throughout our Christian race course as well. When we enter, we're entered. That's it. There's no turning back. And then from that point on, you really identify yourself as a runner. You know, when we look at the Christian equivalent, we realize that there's a lot of things that are very similar. Hearing the call. In Matthew 20:16, we read, for many be called, but few be chosen. And that's the nature of the course. Well, here, how many will respond and be chosen? And we talk about our covenant with Christ. It's not the typical contract. The typical contract is, I have a bicycle I want to sell, and it's $100. That's the offer. And then Wanda J says, I would really like that bicycle. Here's $100. That's acceptance. And then the deal's sealed. When it comes to consecration, it's offer, acceptance, acceptance. So the Heavenly Father has to accept us into the race course. So there's a decision to consecrate, and then we consecrate. And what is the cost? You know, the cost for the marathon was so many dollars. In Luke 14:33, we read, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. So the cost is everything. And, you know, we talked about that this morning. You've got to give your all. He doesn't want half. He doesn't want three quarters. He doesn't want your leftovers. He wants your all. When he says, give me thine heart, he means all your heart. And that's the price. And as such, you identify, just like the runners are identified as runners or marathoners, you are identified as a consecrated or footstep follower, a prospective church member. And that's your identity. Is that the identity that you have with people in the world that you work with or know from where you live or other? It should be. It should be part of your identity. If you're letting your light shine, that's your identity. Just like that runner says, I'm a runner. That's part of my identity. The same with our Christian race. And we call that really dedication. The second thing is the thing that's near and dear to me. And that's be prepared. You know, I was a scout. My son Benjamin was a scout. My youngest son's a scout. And the scout motto is be prepared. And that's a wonderful thing because we see the analogy here too. We need to be prepared in our race course. It requires that we get information. It requires conditioning. It requires that we plan everything down to the last detail. Because, you know, if we look at the analogy of running a marathon, there's nothing that you do just by coincidence. You need to plan everything out. And you have to have conditioning. Everything has to be tested. Well, preparing for our Christian race course requires the same thing. It requires knowledge. It requires experience. And some of the experiences are tough. They're very tough. You know, we heard about some of them in the testimonies today. But we can't be prepared if we do not do, we can't run the course unless we prepare thoroughly. What's the thought about a Christian? He must be thoroughly furnished. That means you've got to be prepared. That's not an accident, being thoroughly furnished. In 1 Corinthians 9:26 and 27, it says, therefore I run in such a way as not to be without aim. I know what my focus is. I am prepared. I am focused. But I discipline my body and make it my slave. Boy, that's exactly what we must do with the flesh versus the new creature, isn't it? You know, when we, for a runner, you've got to have mind over matter. But for a Christian, we have to have spirit over the flesh. And if they get mixed up, our priorities, we will not be prepared. In the world, it says, practice makes perfect. In our lives, it's practice leads to perfection. A sweet thing. This is all about self-discipline. And we're telling you, you can't enter the marathon without self-discipline, and you cannot run in the Christian race course unless you develop self-discipline. And it's a tough thing to do. But each and every one of us has to do it over our lifetimes. It's a prerequisite to being in the course. Do we all come in with lots of self-discipline? Definitely not. But it has to be developed as we continue in the race course. Another thing that's very important is that conditioning counts. And if you're a runner, you have a schedule that you have to follow. You do things with increasing difficulty. The distances get longer. You alternate fast work with slow work. And you build up to a crescendo. And over time, our strength grows. And as a result of that, we build confidence. In our Christian walk, we are constantly learning. If we're not learning every time we have a meeting, a study, or these types of things, we're falling behind. We need to constantly learn and be reminded of these things. And all this growth helps us in our trials. You know, we think about some of these brothers like Charles Martig. We think about having your both of your legs now amputated. I can't imagine that trial, and yet we see the brother with patient endurance. He's accepting it. And he's going on. And he's a wonderful example. So as we go along the way, we have trials of increasing difficulty. It's like wine. It gets sweeter with age. And this builds ultimately character. You know, character is not a decision. It's part of what we are. Early on in our Christian walk, we make lots of decisions. And that's what lays the foundation for our character. But ultimately, it's what we are. In Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, we read, let us run with patience the race that is set before us, who for the joy of set before him endured the cross. And if that's what Jesus endured, how much more patient should we be ourselves? We call this patient endurance. Next thing we have is the saying, no pain, no gain. We've heard this many times in athletics, and it's very true. When we say we consecrate our all, we've got to budget our time and our talents and our money and our heart affections. And that's what's necessary to gain that entrance fee. This helps us focus also on what our ultimate goal is. But when we look at our Christian walk, we have to be all consumed. We have to dedicate ourselves. And it really costs us everything. And by the way, brethren, there is no looking back. In Psalm 54:6, we read, I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good. This really needs to be our attitude. And in Romans 8:18, we read, for I reckon that the suffering of this present time is not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. No pain, no gain. We might restate that. No sacrifice, no crown. You know, if there's not sacrifice in our lives, if we look at our lives and we don't see something that's being sacrificed, then what are we doing? There has to be sacrifice. It must consume us. It's a consuming desire. You know, one of the things as you start to train for a race, you realize you are what you eat. And that you have to have a balanced diet. Can't be too much, can't be too little. If you put on too much weight for the race, it'll slow you down. If you don't get enough, you won't have the energy. So it's a balance of proper nutrition, diet, weight control, and body conditioning or strengthening. And this nourishment is really what's necessary so that you have the energy to finish the race. There's a correlation here, brethren. If you don't have a proper spiritual diet, you will fail in the race course. So we say you've got to have a proper balance of study, of prayer, of service. And what this does overall is it strengthens us. Now, it's kind of interesting. As you condition for a marathon, there's a rule. If you can run 18 miles in your training, you can complete the 26-mile race. You might say, well, you know, you're a few miles short. But what's happening is you're building and you're conditioning your body and your mind so that you can have mind over matter. And what they found, this is what Leukemia and Lymphoma trains people for. If you can run the 18 to 20 mile run, then you can finish them. You will finish the marathon. Now, it's interesting. This marathon that I was in, there was 16,000 people running the full marathon and 8,000 running the half marathon. We'll talk about how it ended up, though. It was a little different. And that has to do with a thing called following the rules. You know, in order to enter the race, you've got to meet the qualifications. And you have to pay the entrance fee. And then the very important thing, you've got to show up. You know, I don't know if you've ever talked to your kids when they're little children, but we had to talk sometimes about the importance of showing up. And it's the same way in our spiritual lives. It's really important that you show up. Because if you show up, if you don't show up, you can't be in the race course. It's that simple. You have to show up. And then you have to follow the course. And then you have to finish the course. So there are some rules and regulations. And the scriptures really lay this out. In Psalm 119, 32 and 33 we read, I run in the path of your commandments. That's kind of a tough one. Not my commandments, but I run in the path of your commandments. For you have set my heart free. Teach me, O Lord, to follow your decrees. Then I will keep them until the end. You know, one of the most important things that we can learn as life is that we've got to show up and we've got to run legally. I don't know if you remember, but a number of years back there was a race, I think it was the New York Marathon, where there was a gal that started out the race and then she ended up with a really incredible time. And they were kind of wondering how she did it, and then they reviewed films from along the way, and they found out she kind of skipped the middle. I think she was a commuter. She commuted. So she finished really strong, and then they could never find any film that had her in the in-between. We can't do that in our Christian race course. We've got to show up, and we've got to follow the course. And the course is not set by any one of us. It's set by the one that went before us. So if you can't follow or you can't show up, you can't finish. Period. It's just that simple. And so the race is a wonderful, really, illustration of how we must run with lawfulness or run in a orderly way. It's a requirement. You know, the scriptures lay forth what the requirements are, and there's not a lot of flexibility. God said, I'm going to make this contract with you. And if you want to fulfill it, you've got to do these certain things. And what does he say to those who don't do that? I know you not. Another thing that's very important is focus, focus, focus. And I will tell you, in the marathon, we got some of the best and some of the worst advice. I know I had friends come up and say, if you get too tired, just stop. If it gets too difficult, you know, you don't have to finish. That's okay. But I will tell you that when you get on the course and you get in the place with all of those people, 16,000 people with a common goal, that is inspirational. And I will tell you, when you sit there waiting for the start, there is no focus other than I will finish this race. Now, of those 16,000, I don't know how many didn't show. I would guess 1,000 didn't show. So maybe there was 15,000 there. How many do you think finished? 9,305. Not everybody finishes. And I will guarantee you, if you have an attitude that I'm going to get there if it's convenient, you will drop out. There is no doubt in my mind. because you reach points in the course where you just are focused on the goal and you keep on going. And if you don't have that mindset, you will fail. So, brethren, with regards to our Christian race, we need to be totally focused. We have an attitude, we will succeed. How many out in this, I'm not going to ask for sure, how many of you would raise your hands if I asked you, how many of you are going to be satisfied just to be great company? That's like, you sort of ran for a while, but you didn't completely finish and weren't successful. Our focus has to be, we will succeed. We will do everything in our way. And the way you run a marathon is, everything is put behind. The focus on moving forward. And one of the worst things you can do in a marathon is stop. When you stop, you die. I can tell you that. You can slow down, you can walk, but you always have to go forward. Sounds like our Christian walk, doesn't it? If you stop, you will atrophy, you will tighten up. You will not be able to start again. It's a critical error. Do some people have to stop for first aid? Certainly. But you never want to have to do it unless it's an emergency. Pacing is all important as well. You know, you have to run a consistent race, and most people, quite frankly, run out too quick. That's always the thing that people do, because when you're running with 16,000 people plus 8,000 others, it's inspirational. And so your energy levels up. In business, we call this synergy. That's where you get a whole lot of momentum in the same direction, and that's what you have when you look back and you see thousands of people in front, unfortunately, and thousands of people behind. Is it builds a synergy. You're all focused on going the same way. But pacing counts. You don't want to be full of fits and starts. That's a very serious problem. In Revelation 3:15, we're warned against this issue, where we read, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. He's talking about the Laodicean church. That's the church of our time period. I wish that you were neither one of them. The Lord desires that we're steady. It's like the tortoise and the hare. We want to be the tortoise. We want to be steady but focused on reaching our goal. In Hebrews 10:23, we read, let us hold fast to the profession of our faith without wavering. Because, you know, for a character to be tried and true, it has to be solid. Sometimes solid is fast. Sometimes solid is slow. Let me give you an example in the race. I was out at mile roughly 10, and I'm running along, and there's, you know, literally hundreds of people around me, and I see an elderly lady running, and she's actually running kind of crippled over, but she's out in front of me, and I'm trying to catch up with her, and I'm having problems. I'm not catching up with her and staying on my pace, so I finally caught up with her, and I ran with her for 10 or 20 minutes. I started talking to her. She's from Chicagoland. She's 80 years old, and she started running marathons when she was 70 years old. But now she runs half marathons because she thought she should moderate a little bit. But, you know, she had pacing. She knew her pace, and she was dead on it, and she was comfortable with it. And that's what counts. And we really call that consistency from a character standpoint. The other thing is that we have to run with certainty. We have to be confident that we can complete. And then really that's what that, if you can run 18 miles, you can run 26 miles is all about. Because if you know you can run 18 miles, when you get in the race, you will be carried along and there'll be so much support that you'll want to finish. We find this in our Christian course as well. In Hebrews 10:35 and 36, it says, cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, that ye might receive the promise. We should run with certainty. We should run with confidence. Another thing that we see in the marathon is you've got to reach beyond yourself. And we're told that at about between mile 18 and 22, we hit the wall. There's nothing more there. And what that has to do is the glycogen in your muscles, the sugar in your muscles is gone. So all of a sudden you have rubber legs. But you notice people keep on going, and that's where you get into mind over matter. And that's a thing we really call faith. And we've all had those experiences in our Christian walk when we just hit the wall. We don't think we can go on. And then we receive encouragement and love and concern from our brethren, and it allows us to go beyond ourselves. We have another thing we call enthusiasm. And I just love this runner. He's jumping for joy. And that's the way we should be in our Christian race course. And I was impressed. One of the things I resolved to do is through this entire marathon, all 26.2 miles, was I said, I want to enjoy the journey. So if there's anything we should do in our Christian walk, is we should enjoy and savor each day along the way. What's the saying? Today is called the present. That's because it's a gift from God. So every day we should savor and realize that we have a wonderful perspective given to us by the divine plan of the ages. Another thing that we saw in the race was that there was tremendous camaraderie. There's a real sense of community among runners. They help each other out. They encourage each other. And there's a real sense of oneness. We see that in our ecclesial lives as well. We encourage one another no matter what the issues. We have camaraderie. We identify with each other. And we call that community. And finally, at the end of it all, it has to be all spent. We must focus on the goal. We must put forth our best. And when it is finished, we must be spent. We must have spent our all, but we must not be all spent. That means we have to put everything forward, but you always have a little in reserve. But there's nothing more that you could put on the altar. And ultimately, this is our goal. In James 1:12, we read, blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, when he's finished the course, he will receive the crown of life. And a thing of beauty is to see a Christian life emptied in service. So when they finish their course, they've completely emptied themselves. One last thing. While running one of my training runs, I was running along through a mobile home court, and this elderly man with a cane was walking along, and he said, I wish I could do that. You know, it really touched me, because we realize, you know, that was running. And of course, the elderly wishes they could run like a Giselle, or, you know, do all of these things again. But, you know, it made me think about our spiritual walk. We look at all of those in the world of mankind, they go, they're going to say, I wish I could have done that. This shows us that we have a privilege of receiving the call. We should have an urgency as a result of that. We have the faith to follow the call, and we have the humility to fulfill the call. In Acts 22:15-16, we read, for thou shalt be a witness unto all men of what has been seen and heard. Why tarriest thou? Why tarriest thou? You know, we think of this traditionally as, you haven't consecrated, why are you tarrying? But it also applies to those that have consecrated. Why are you tarrying? Pick up the pace, stay focused as well. Completing the long run requires dedication, self-discipline, sacrifice, lawfulness, preparation, proper nourishment, single-mindedness, patient endurance, confidence, faith, passion, community, joy, and being completely emptied. See the similarities? It's the exact same things. And I think this is why the Apostle Paul used this as such a beautiful analogy. And as such, looking at these attributes that we must manifest, the question is, where are you on the race course? We heard about some that are probably very close to finishing their course. And there are others that seemingly we have a ways to go. But we need to evaluate ourselves based on these criteria, because our God is a God that is faithful to deliver what he has promised. So God's promise to those in the spiritual long race is, be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. To our God and Father be glory forever. Amen.